And we're live.
Hi, I am Nils Lofgren. Do you remember me from that song that I made that one time that very few people know? Yes, I'm going to be taking my music off of Spotify this very instant if you do not censor Joe Rogan. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Prince Harry, and my wife told me to come on here and say that we are going to take our podcast off of Spotify that no one listens to, but we're going to take it off anyway, unless Spotify censors Joe Rogan.
And I'm Rebecca Black, and I'm going to put only the song Friday on Spotify. That's the only song that will be available to you, unless you censor Joe Rogan.
And I'm the guy from Nickelback, whatever his name is, and we are threatening to put our music on Spotify as well, unless Spotify censors Joe Rogan.
Dude, that's a pretty valid threat.
You know,
I would start shaking in my boots if I got told I'd have to listen to Nickelback.
This is how you remind me to censor people you disagree with.
Oh, yeah, guys, I'm sure you guys have been hearing about Joe Rogan and Spotify. It's been a pretty contentious back and forth. Drama, drama, drama. Why? Because Joe Rogan had two men on his podcast, Dr. Robert Malone and Dr. Peter McCullough, that people did not like, and they did not like the opinions of them. Not all people, because, again, Joe Rogan's podcast still has 11 million viewers per episode, so I don't know what we're talking about. But we had some music artists come out and say, this is misinformation. How dare you spread this misinformation about COVID-19? How dare you ask people to question the medical advice and the medical treatment that they get? How dare you ask people to be skeptical about something that they're injecting into their body? What a disservice to civil discourse. So we've got a few artists here. Nils Lofgren, who, do you even know who that is?
I don't actually. I mean, he's a guitarist for some band that was relevant, I think.
Okay. So this guy, he's in solidarity with Neil Young. So Neil Young really led the charge here. You guys know him from his song Harvest Moon, I'm sure. At least that's the only song that I know Neil Young from.
Same.
The same for you. So yep. Yeah, he threatened to take his music off Spotify. He was successful. He did do that, all in response to Joe Rogan. Nils Lofgren followed his lead on that. You might have heard Joni Mitchell also joined in solidarity, she says, with Neil Young and taking her music off, which I'm actually sad about. And because I like Joni Mitchell. I love her music. Cactus Tree, a banger. 10 out of 10. Her political opinions and her views on freedom of speech.
0 out of 10.
Yeah, 0 out of 10.
I could not name one Joni Mitchell song, sadly.
Well, it's okay. And now you'll never get to know because you're a Spotify user.
I guess not. Yeah.
So she joined Neil Young as well in solidarity. And then we had the brave, the beautiful, the stunning Meghan Markle and Harry step in and join the Joe Rogan protest and say that they demand Spotify make changes on COVID misinformation. So really what I'm seeing here is seemingly a bunch of somewhat irrelevant celebrities come out and say, you know what, I don't like what he's saying, so I don't want my music on your platform. And that is your prerogative. By all means, go ahead and do that. But if what you're asking is for him to be censored and to not let him have these conversations with people who are reputable and credible, you need to reevaluate what you think. And why would you be sitting here as somebody who's a music artist, and for those of you who know, the people in the creative space are meant to be open and free-flowing and want to have discussions. Apparently not. Apparently they want to censor Joe Rogan and censor the, again, credible and reputable people that he is having on his podcast. Why? Because they can't handle the cognitive dissonance that comes along with hearing real facts. I think that's exactly what it is. I don't think it's about misinformation. I don't think it's about people's health and wellness. I think they can't stand somebody who refuses to go along with the narrative. And Joe Rogan is somebody who's been open to having everybody on his podcast, people on the left, people in the center, people on the right. But when it's people on the right or people who say something that deviates from the typical woke leftist narrative, people are always up in arms.
Yeah, it's telling that these artists in question, like the Neil Youngs and the Joni Mitchells, these were the people back in the day that were like the countercultural, think for yourself, yes. Be different. The artists, you know, the tip of the spear on you know, individuality and such. And
yeah.
Now they're literally saying, oh, I doubt that any of them have taken the time to listen to Joe Rogan at all, much less the controversial episodes in question. But here they are calling for the censorship of someone who they've heard probably through the grapevine that, oh, they're not saying approved things. And, you know, I you know, in typical Will It On The Live fashion, do we say they mean well, maybe? Or, you know, if Will were here, he'd probably, which by the way, we should say people are asking where Will is at. You should explain.
Will is in Europe. He's doing a small little European tour. He's going to be talking to you guys out there, doing some speeches and hopefully recording some content that you guys get to see while he's on his trip. I believe he just landed in Germany today. So I think that's where he's at.
Yeah. Yes.
So he's not going to be here for the next 2 weeks. So it's just going to be me and Taylor holding it down for you.
Hopefully he comes back with a better German accent.
Yes. Hopefully he comes back with just better accents all across the board.
But yeah, he will be sending us little updates here and there. So we'll get little Will Witt travel vlog, I guess. I mean, I doubt it'll be that robust. He'll probably just rant about something he's concerned with. That's fine. That's what we want from
him
anyway.
That's also fine. Yeah, that's what we know Will for. But yeah, there is something to be said about the shift in mentality here, because we used to have these artists, especially Joni Mitchell and Neil Young, who stepped outside of a box of saying, you know what? I am going to be anti-establishment and anti-corporatism and super pro-feminist and, you know, the old staples of what it meant to be a leftist. And now they're super pro corporation and super pro big pharma. And if you deviate from anything that big pharma and the CDC and the WHO tell you to do, then you should get heat for it. And to not see that deviation is just beyond me. It just amazes me that they can go through with what they're doing right now. Active censorship and, you know, the tamping down of a free speech and feel okay about it. In fact, feel virtue about it. But you know what? If I was a celebrity that was semi-irrelevant in this day and time, I might hop on the Joe Rogan bandwagon too and say, I'm going to take my stuff off Spotify. I'm sure it's gotten them a lot of publicity. Not to say that that's their motive, but if I was Nils Lofgren...
Oh, yeah, him.
I mean, if I was that guy, I would certainly hop on Joni Mitchell's and Neil Young's bandwagon here and protest Joe Rogan. And we all know that Meghan Markle and Harry are no strangers to the old virtue signal. They did what they do. They promised, for the sake of the environment, that they would have two kids and nothing more, because that's good for the environment to only have two children. And then we had Harry go on his paternity leave, and we had that famous conversation here on the show. Meghan and Harry are no stranger to leftist virtue signaling. And I fear that they will continue to do it more in the future. And we will have to continue to hear about them. For what reason? I don't know.
It's beyond us. But yeah, didn't they go on Oprah and talk about how oppressed they all are?
Yes, how the racist the royal family is, and how oppressed she felt living in the royal house, and how she got Harry to take her out of there. So he left his longstanding bloodline of the royal family for this woman who accused them of racism. So, I mean, to each their own. Everybody can make their own choices. I'm just tired of thinking that their choices are relevant. Yet they keep coming up. But Joe Rogan came out and gave a response to what's happening with Spotify. He's been relatively quiet while all this drama and controversy has been stirring up on the internet, and people have been, you know, slinging mud at him and some praising him and supporting him. But here's his response and where we're going in the future with Spotify and the Joe Rogan Experience.
I think there's a lot of people that have a distorted perception of what I do, maybe based on sound bites or based on headlines of articles that are disparaging. The podcast has been accused of spreading dangerous misinformation, specifically about two episodes, a little bit about some other ones, but specifically about two. One with Dr. Peter McCullough and one with Dr. Robert Malone. Dr. Peter McCullough is a cardiologist, and he is the most published physician in his field in history. Dr. Robert Malone owns 9 patents on the creation of mRNA vaccine technology and is at least partially responsible for the creation of the technology that led to mRNA vaccines. Both these people are very highly credentialed very intelligent, very accomplished people, and they have an opinion that's different from the mainstream narrative. I wanted to hear what their opinion is. I had them on, and because of that, those episodes in particular, those episodes were labeled as being dangerous. They had dangerous misinformation in them. The problem I have with the term misinformation, especially today, is that many of the things that we thought of as misinformation just a short while ago are now accepted as fact. Like, for instance, 8 months ago, if you said, if you get vaccinated, you can still catch COVID and you can still spread COVID, you would be removed from social media. They would ban you from certain platforms. Now, that's accepted as fact. If you said, I don't think cloth masks work, you would be banned from social media. Now, that's openly and repeatedly stated on CNN. If you said, I think it's possible that COVID-19 came from a lab, you'd be banned from many social media platforms. Now, that's on the cover of Newsweek. All of those theories that at one point in time were banned were openly discussed by those two men that I had on my podcast that have been accused of dangerous misinformation. I do not know if they're right. I don't know, because I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a person who sits down and talks to people and has conversations with them. Do I get things wrong? Absolutely, I get things wrong, but I try to correct them. Whenever I get something wrong, I try to correct it because I'm interested in telling the truth.
Yeah, let's pause there. There's so much said in this that should be hearkened on, because it's something that we often forget. The things that we were getting told were conspiracy theories and that we were conspiracy theorists 2 years ago have all panned out to be true. And he gave several examples right here. So who gets to decide what is misinformation? And clearly, whatever metric we're using now is wrong, because there's so many things that were labeled as misinformation and taken off the internet and people's livelihoods ruined, their accounts ruined 2 years ago, that are 100% true today. And we can hear them on mainstream media, on CNN, on ABC, on MSNBC. They're talking about it. They're saying the exact things that we were saying. And that's okay for them. But 2 years ago, we're being censored. And the same thing is going to happen here. Like he said, two reputable physicians on his podcast, one whom created the foundation for the mRNA vaccine, which is what these COVID vaccinations are. And yet these are not credible enough people to be held on Spotify. And we have a bunch of music artists who are coming out and saying that they should be taken off. It's simply ridiculous. And I applaud Joe Rogan for having such a calm demeanor here. It's gone through now that Spotify is going to put a disclaimer on any Joe Rogan future podcasts that have anything that they would consider to be misinformation or deviation from the COVID narrative on his show.
It's sad. It's like, instead of all these disclaimers and like the need to control information and to say what's approved to be spoken, to be words that are approved to be uttered or not, like, Joe Rogan has had Sanjay Gupta, and to his point, he said he's had plenty of other people on, and he's saying, I'm willing to have other people on. And
yep,
he would be, I know Joe Rogan would be perfectly willing to have Dr. Fauci, Francis Collins, the CDC Director Walensky, any of these people, Surgeon General, who actually mm-hmm. spoke out that he needs to be censored. He would have any of them on. And the problem is, none of them would be willing to subject themselves to 3 hours of tough, honest questioning from Joe Rogan, which
right.
is why people listen to Joe Rogan in the first place, because he's honest, and he's a straight shooter. You can hear his tone in this video. Super honest, super straightforward, super just laying down the facts. And it's so obvious that these people would just not go on and defend their positions that they're imposing on everyone else. So that's why it's asymmetrical, and people see that. If you're insisting that only one point of view be allowed to be heard, then okay, go defend that point of view and subject it to questioning rather than censoring the people who question it.
Yeah, and it's interesting to have such a vivid attack on Joe Rogan. For what? If anybody watches his podcast, which I think most of the people criticizing him don't, because that's what people who virtue signal do, they criticize things they know nothing about, have come after Joe Rogan when he interviews with quite a bit of impartiality. Obviously, Joe Rogan is right-leaning. That's very, very clear. But he approaches interviews in a way that is
not according to himself.
Yeah, but
he
says
he's left-leaning, and he supported Bernie Sanders, just for the record.
Right. But yeah, I think
he's more liberal-centric.
Yeah, maybe
classical liberal type.
We'll call him classical liberal centrist then. It's funny to me that sort of comes into my mind as being right now, because the woke left is so left. But yeah, so this is somebody who doesn't even personally identify with right wing politics, and approaches his interviews just with, you know, being inquisitive. He asks people as if he's not heard what they've talked about. And that's what he does. So he doesn't really take onus of any opinion in these particular interviews anyways, and just lets the experts speak and describe what they've seen and what they've studied. And these are studies that they did that were approved by people working on COVID vaccines. So it just is crazy to me that simply because it deviates from what people have been told this entire time, they want this taken off the internet. And I'm curious to see how this all pans out. Like I said, Spotify said they're going to put a disclaimer on his future episodes, and Joe Rogan supports that disclaimer. I don't know how I feel
like
about it.
That he conceded that, honestly.
Yeah. In his video, and you can go and check this out on his Instagram, he talks about the fact that there's going to be disclaimers on his future episodes that talk about these issues and that could possibly present misinformation. And it's going to say, you know, consult your physician first or stuff like that. And he said that's fine and that he supports that and he thinks it's a good decision. I don't know that I think it is that, because they're clearly not going to do that for anybody else on any other side of the aisle. It's just going to be for him. So we'll see. But that's what the future of this looks like for now. And Spotify is going to keep him, which I'm happy to hear.
Yeah. Well, how much credit do you give Spotify in this whole situation? I mean, clearly they're feeling the heat on social media. There's mm-hmm. a lot of people from the mainstream media and the left that are calling for Spotify to censor, kick him off. And they've stood by him, but then they're imposing these disclaimers and they just released some new like guidance protocols on what their podcast episodes yeah. are. And their hands aren't totally clean either, because they've taken down other episodes.
Yeah,
they've taken down other episodes of Joe Rogan and they've censored a lot of other stuff. So I don't give them a ton of credit, because at the end of the day, Joe Rogan, you know, what is it, like 11 million people listen to download his podcast, where it's like, you know, less than 1 million watch your regular CNN show.
Right.
So they have him, but they need him more than he needs them.
Exactly. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing here. I don't think that Spotify is a beacon of free speech and tolerance of differential opinions. I think what they're doing here is seeing that Joe Rogan's a moneymaker, clearly. He's probably the highest grossing person on Spotify, and they can't afford to lose the attention that he gets and the entertainment that he brings to people and the amount of an audience that he reaches. So they're going to pander to people by saying, oh, well, we're going to keep him because free speech, but we're going to put disclaimers on it for you guys. I think they're going to put as many Band-Aids on this wound as they can to keep it, you know, together, and hopefully just ride it out until it passes, because he makes them far too much money and he's gotten them far too many downloads for them to take him off of their platform. If he was a smaller creator, I think Spotify would have no problem in taking him off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's only because of the attention he has and the support that he has that they're even giving him a chance.
Right, right. And that's the interesting thing when we talk about the cancel culture is that cancel culture comes after everybody, but the people who come out on the other end are the people who are established and have a foundation and have this base. What if Joe Rogan didn't have this base? It would just be another drop in the bucket and nobody would hear it. It'd be that tree that falls in the forest that nobody hears. And that's unfortunate, because it's happening to people far and wide here in this country on every single platform, on every single social media app. And those are the people you don't hear about and you'll never hear about. And it's something that J.K. Rowling expressed when she was in the process of trying to be canceled by the political left on Twitter. She said, it's amazing to me that I've gotten through this, and I'm lucky because of the audience that I have. And there's so many other women and men who go through this and you hear nothing of it. Yeah. So it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, how many times have you been banned off of TikTok for similar reasons?
Right. And I'm lucky that
you're relatively high profile for most people. You know, like we've tried on PragerU, we'll start a new account and get banned with, it's like whack-a-mole for them.
Right.
So, yeah.
It's a tough line that we walk. Well, we'll keep you guys posted on future irrelevant artists that pull their content off of Spotify, none of whom are garnering anywhere near as much attention as Joe Rogan is getting. If anything, this has helped his podcast immensely, and I think more people are going to watch it, and they're going to hear this crazy extreme rhetoric of people calling him a bigot and anti-science, and then they're going to watch his podcast because they're curious and go, this is not at all what I thought. This is not at all what I heard. So I'm excited for that turnaround.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of turnarounds, Barry Weiss posted on her Substack today an article written by Jane Kitchen, who is a student at Hillsdale College now. I just wanted to highlight this really quickly and then we'll move on. But she posted, and here's the headline: last year I was a Bryn Mawr girl. Now I'm at Hillsdale. And you can go and read this article again, Barry Weiss's Substack. But it's this girl who talks about being a leftist and going to Bryn Mawr's campus, as she writes here, and thinking, you know what, this is going to be great. I can't wait to be surrounded by like-minded people. And she got there and realized how much of a religion leftism is and how dogmatic it is. And here are some little things that she quoted here. When asked, how's your semester? A girl said, I'm having a great semester, but I totally acknowledge that some students, especially BIPOC students, face a lot of challenges on campus. She mentions so much just mumbo jumbo around identity and identity politics. And then the hard hitter in this is the COVID safety precautions and how that hit her in her college experience, which is, again, a group that we don't think about is students and children when it comes to COVID-19 and all the things that we've done. So the weekly PCR testing, not being able to eat in certain places, wearing a mask when you're encountering other people, even though we know that they don't work. And what this girl decided to do is she left a $75,000 scholarship at Bryn Mawr College because the college was not supporting her liberty, her individualism, her right to freedom of speech. And she left and she went to Hillsdale College. And it's amazing. I want to find a certain part that she writes here that I thought was particularly... Let's see. Okay. I quickly discovered... in my admission interview for Hillsdale, a small school of less than 1,500 students, founded by Baptists in Michigan, I praised Christopher Hitchens because she's an atheist as one of my intellectual heroes. I disclosed that I was not religious. I debated with my interviewer about whether math was invented or discovered, and they wanted me anyway. I've been at Hillsdale College for 3 weeks, and life here is blissfully normal. And she just talks about how she had this view of what it meant to be at a conservative institution or an institution that wasn't outwardly liberal. And she thought it was going to be devastating. She wouldn't be able to speak to anybody. She wouldn't be able to have conversations with differing opinions. And she found out that wasn't the case at all. And she said that even though my views of what it meant to be conservative or to be in a conservative area were so black and white, it really wasn't that. And she found that Hillsdale was actually a better college that fostered her intellectuality, her right to speak, her right to have diverse opinions. And that's something that we should all be thinking about, not only when looking at schools, but just looking at life.
Yeah, so isn't it really telling cool that she just said, what did she say, beautifully normal?
Yeah.
It's like normal is such a high bar these days, just to escape somewhere that's not going to be trying to indoctrinate you,
yep,
to impose all kinds of mandates on you, to control your information that you're getting. That's all you can ask for just to start. That's like starting at zero. And so many of the institutions across the United States now are starting way below zero. They're illiberal fundamentally because they're censoring perspectives that they don't like. They're imposing all kinds of these safety, quote unquote, mandates on you,
right,
and it's indoctrination. And yeah, I commend her for leaving like $75,000 of worthless education.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it's like it's like what our currency is becoming.
Yeah,
with all the money that we're printing, it's worthless.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I admire somebody who's taken the plunge and realized this. I'll read this last part of her article again. You can read this at Barry Weiss's Substack. These past few years have introduced a lot of potential for regret and embarrassment, but instead, I was forced to embody the values I had previously only performed, like honesty and courage. In that respect, I'm glad this all happened. I know what I really believe, and I'm not afraid anymore. And that resonates with me so much because that's exactly what I went through in my journey out of leftism. You go, oh my gosh, I feel regret and embarrassment for all the things that I said and did before that were completely performative. They had no foundation. They had no support for them. But you do it because it feels good and you get virtue from doing it. And then as soon as you step out of that and actually start being honest and actually start being courageous and actually start to say what you truly think, whole new world opens up. So I'm very happy for this young girl. I hope that other college students follow. Now, let's get into some more people who are being brave and courageous and stepping up. You guys heard about the Freedom Convoy in Canada. I want to show this quick video of more trucks entering this Freedom Convoy. In I think it was initially projected that there was going to be, what, like 50,000 trucks in this Freedom Convoy, and I think they far surpassed the amount of truckers that they thought were going to be involved in this. And I'm just so curious to see how Canada responds.
I don't know. All I saw was one Nazi flag in that whole video. There was no trucks, just Nazi people.
It's just crazy that, again, no matter what you do, this is the biggest convoy to, this is like a Guinness Book of World Records convoy in terms of this protest in particular. And the coverage, where is it? Where is it from mainstream media? Because all I'm seeing is alternative news outlets and independent outlets and maybe Fox News talking about this happening in Canada. And this is massive. And this is people taking agency and saying, no, you don't get to tell me what to do with my body. And I'm going to make you uncomfortable. I'm going to make you uncomfortable. I'm going to make this society function a little bit less for what you're doing to me. And I am important to the bedrock of your lifestyle and your livelihood in this country. And guess what? I'm no longer going to do it. And let's see what happens. And when you do that as just one person, that's an amazing thing. But to see 50,000 plus people go ahead and do that is fantastic.
Yeah, and they're being cheered along by the hundreds, people coming out on the streets everywhere they go, just lining the streets, cheering them on, which, by the way, I heard there was some sort of regulation passed that you're no longer allowed to do that and gather to, and cheer these people on.
Surprise.
And then they've raised, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 million on GoFundMe, and GoFundMe froze their funds. So all the weapons of government, mainstream media, all these institutions are coming against them. I mean, I made that reference to the quote-unquote Nazi flag that is seen at one of these rallies or something, which I heard that somebody, as a criticism of the government, they were putting the Nazi emblem like upside down on a Canadian flag to criticize. But anyway, the mainstream media's coverage was all about, at these rallies where this flag was seen, then that's how they just blanketly characterized the whole thing, is that to undercut what is actually happening, which is this awesome awakening of people standing up for their freedom.
Yeah, it's so funny how it's just so obvious, the media bias and the propaganda, that you can see 50,000 people organizing against a singular piece of legislation and then focus on one and say this one person has a Nazi symbol. And then that's the narrative that you go with. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't point out the failing of journalism, not only in this country, but in Canada, I don't know what else does. It's so clearly not a depiction of what this means at all. And that's a trick that we all fall into, but particularly on the left, where we look at people and go, well, I saw a conservative that said they were a neo-Nazi once, so all conservatives must be neo-Nazis. And look at this one guy with a Nazi emblem on his flag that's not even directed to describe what they're doing, but you're all Nazis.
And and there's videos of other protesters who see these type of people there and are like telling them to go away, get that out of here. That's not what this is about. So it's the same old thing of just the media pick and choosing how they want to characterize something and ignoring the central part of the plot, which is this amazing thing happening before our eyes of thousands and thousands of trucks, descending on Ottawa for people to stand up for their freedom.
Yeah. Amazing. And it must be a sort of nerve-wracking for these people. This is their livelihoods. This is their jobs. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, no, I'm going to step away from this. So that is an amazing thing. Did you see the guy who said like he's not going to receive his organ transplant because they asked him to be vaccinated first?
Yeah, that's so wild. That is commitment to the end, to what you believe in.
Yeah, that is such a strong stance that I don't know that I could be as like a strong to do that. Do you think you could?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I would definitely be looking if like, is there another hospital system that doesn't have this requirement or something?
Right.
But kudos to him for making a statement and dictating his terms.
Yeah, man. Kudos to that guy saying, I'm not going to let you force me to do anything. That's a particularly sadistic thing to do, to hold something, to dangle something, so a carrot, so important as an organ transplant in front of somebody and say you have to get vaccinated first.
It's evil.
Completely ridiculous. Yeah, and it's very similar to what we saw with the Ronald McDonald House, of those kids being told that they're going to be evicted, them and their families evicted from the Ronald McDonald House that is used to treat cancer and terminal illness because they're not vaccinated. You want your terminally ill child to receive a vaccination before they can stay.
It's just bonkers.
It's so questionable, and I'm curious to see what happens, because again, this convoy is going to be, I think, the first of many. I think there's organizing one in the US. So if that garners any attention and takes off, we will be talking about that as well. But we're seeing protests in Austria and in Germany and Australia, everywhere people are getting sick and tired. And it's their right. It's due time that people get sick and tired of what's happening right now. Now, speaking of this,
real quick, before we get in on the new channel, we have a poll going on where that is asking, should we get a cardboard cut out of Will while he's on vacation? So I think our guy Spencer made that poll, and 84% say yes. We should 84%. Have a cardboard cut out of Will.
Okay,
his spot is looking a little lonely right now.
It is. There it is, guys. It's looking a little barren. We're going to work on that. Guys, if you want to go and answer that poll, you can go to the Will and Amala live channel. It's going to be far more interactive than being on PragerU. Plus, it's a channel just for you and just for this show. We're going to be posting exclusive clips, exclusive content for you guys. Go to Will and Amala live. It is in the description down below if you're watching from the PragerU channel right now, and subscribe to us there. Eventually, we're going to be streaming only on that channel, so go and give us a little follow there. Now, this is a devastating video. Those of you who know this, there was a New York officer by the name of Jason Rivera who was killed in New York City. His wife got on a press conference to talk about this. It's really, we've been no stranger to police officers dying and people getting killed in our nations, particularly in cities like New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Detroit. It's becoming an epidemic in a lot of places, and it's largely due to progressive policies that are allowing these things to happen and incentivizing people to commit crimes. Now, here is the wife of Jason Rivera addressing what happened to her husband and talking about what she feels the problem is.
The system continues to fail us. We are not safe anymore. Not even the members of the service. I know you were tired of these laws, especially the ones from the new DA. I hope he's watching you speak through me right now.
Pause it there. That's a heartbreaking thing to watch. And it is something that has not only happened, but is going to continue to happen so long as these policies exist. And it's unfortunate to think that this man could be one of many and probably will be one of many. And most recently here in Los Angeles, we had an off-duty police officer get robbed by three men and tried to fight them off. They attempted to kill him. He killed two of them and then they killed him. So it's something that is running rampant. And to think that policies have nothing to do with this is simply incorrect. Right now, particularly in the city of Los Angeles, with COVID regulations, they're giving out plea deals like nobody's business, and criminals are going back out in the streets. They're implementing these zero bail policies, which they think is going to help people with lower incomes. And what you're doing is telling criminals, hey, it's going to be fine if you go and commit a crime. Why not go and do it? Because we're going to put you out on zero bail. You'll be back out on the street again the next day and you can go and do it again. And it's just simply ridiculous that we can implement these policies, see the direct changes that they're having on our communities, the people that are dying, the men, women, and children dying as a result of this, and to not do anything about it. San Francisco is a great example. You saw Mayor London Breed get up there and say, we need aggressive law enforcement. And where is it? Crickets. Crickets after that, when we know our cities are being affected. And I just, this is what makes it hard for me to believe that people have good intentions, particularly when it comes to the bureaucrats and the policymakers in these cities, because there is no way that you don't hear those words. There is no way that you don't see the way that your city is being affected. There is no way that you're not walking the streets of your city and seeing the destruction that is a direct result of what you've advocated for. And these cities are looking like third world countries, as a one governor would say. I won't mention his name. So to see the destruction that you are creating and to then not do anything about it, or to even worse, implement policies that further that destruction, is just devastating.
Yeah, it reminds me of the conversation you guys had with Matt Walsh last week. Mm-hmm. About, he was talking about on the Dr. Phil show, how he would describe the damages and lay out how the policies that these people support, mm-hmm. and the ideology that these people support, causes harm to trans people, to girls who are robbed of their sports achievements, to girls who are sexually assaulted in prisons.
Yep.
And there you are. When you're at the point when you are willing to look at that in the face, the suffering that and damage and harm that is being caused by these ideas, and you say, you know what, I don't care. I'm going to continue on with this ideology. I'm going to continue pushing it. I just don't care. And, you know, I saw those images on social media that circulate this week of all those police officers lining the streets in New York City. It was an amazing and powerful imagery. But I just can't help but wonder, like, what's going through their minds in that moment? Like, do they feel like their hands are tied? Like, and where do they stand on the policy, on these policies that put their lives in danger?
And I can speak a little bit to that, because those of you who know what I do outside of PragerU, I work a lot with LAPD, and that's something that I'm going to continue to do throughout the duration of this year, more so in depth, and you guys are going to get videos of me doing that. But they're so demoralized in the work that they're doing right now, because they are essentially handcuffed, for lack of a better word, from doing what they need to do, from helping people, from helping their communities. And a lot of them, the only thing that is keeping these police officers on their job is the people in the communities that they've built relationships and that they care about, and they are willing to sacrifice themselves for those people. And that's a lot of what we forget. Are there bad cops? Absolutely. But are the majority of them good men and women who are trying to protect their communities? Yes. Yes, that is the answer. And right now there's no incentive to do that. And in some cases they can't do it. I do several ride-alongs with LAPD, and they can have crimes, like, literally committed right in front of them that they can't do anything about. I mean, prostitutes standing on the side of the street, and I won't say where, but prostitutes standing on the side of the street, and they are so consumed with the shootings and the stabbings and the blatant violence being inflicted on members of this community, and often children, that they can't even police properly. So they're understaffed, they are under-resourced, they are overworked, and what can you do in that situation? And what keeps you in your job? I don't know. I don't know. So if we see this great exodus of police officers from the force, which we are seeing, don't be surprised. Don't be shocked, because it's what we're advocating for. And doing all that whilst getting hate from your community is just unbelievable. And you know what's going to happen? The people who do go into police work are not going to be doing it for any sort of good intent, because what good intent would there be when they're demoralized like this? It is going to be the people who are power tripping. It is going to be the people who want to get a badge and a gun in 6 months and just run through the academy and get a paycheck. That's what you're going to be left with. And it's an unfortunate reality that people are not talking about it. Meanwhile, the mainstream media is talking about a possible war between Russia and Ukraine, and what our position is on that in a foreign affair. That's what we're talking about. While people are getting killed and slaughtered on U.S. soil, we're discussing whether or not we should be involved with Ukraine and Russia. It's just like, it's just like, where is your focus? And just a quick tidbit on this, even the Ukrainian president came out and said that the United States is stirring up hysteria in Ukraine, and that Ukraine has dealt with the looming presence of Russia for quite some time now, and is totally normal at this point. And even the president of Ukraine is saying that us in the U.S., we are causing panic in Ukraine.
Yeah, we make up a crisis on their border,
yes,
while ignoring the real one on our own and covering that up.
Right. Exactly. You will hear no coverage of the young people getting shot and killed in Chicago, which is happening every single week. But God forbid that we lose coverage on Ukraine and its relationship with Russia and expanding NATO. God forbid. because that's our goal. And that's what propagandists do. They distract you with issues that at this moment in time have absolutely nothing to do with you. Meanwhile, they stoke fires in your own country that create all of these social issues that we can't handle. We're juggling so many things at this moment in time that we can't even keep our eye on the ball. And that's just a brilliant, brilliant tactic of distraction. Now, all the hard stuff out of the way. Let's get to Dear Will and Amala. You guys submitted your advice questions onto my Instagram at the Amala Benobi. You can also follow Taylor at Taylor Trandall and Will at the Will Wit if you want to keep up with his European excursions. So you guys submitted your advice questions on friends, family, dating, politics, relationships, anything you want. And I'm going to answer them here for you guys today. Number one, Dear Will and Amala, how to deal with a girlfriend with mental health issues. This is from Elliot Ave. Okay. Any initial thoughts, Taylor?
I don't know. You get to see these before I do. So yeah. You always like throw it right to me.
And I know. Like, I always toss it over. Always need a second. Even though I put these together, I need a second to process too. Okay. This is a multifaceted question. I don't know what these specific mental health issues are. This definitely does require a bit more detail. But I think at baseline, this can often be difficult to deal with when you are in a relationship with somebody, because relationships rely a lot on chemistry. And when you are in a relationship with somebody who has mental health issues, sometimes that chemistry can be sort of taken off kilter or off its equilibrium through no fault of their own, because this is a mental health problem. And being the partner, especially being a male partner, who typically men are far less in tune with their emotions than women are, it can be difficult to understand why somebody might be feeling the way that they're feeling. And you immediately want to brush it off as, oh, this is nothing. And I don't know why she feels this way, or you know, she's crazy, something like that. You have to take an active effort, I think, if you want to be with this girl who's experiencing mental health issues, to understand what she's going through, what she's feeling, and how that changes on a day-to-day basis. I would even say, if this girl is going to therapy sessions or things for her mental health issues and you truly want to understand what she's going through and sort of cement that into your relationship, join her and her therapist maybe, and see what the therapist has to say. Get educated on what she's dealing with, because that will be really important.
Yeah, that's good. Just without going into too much detail, my wife has a history of mental health issues as someone who's married to someone with who's dealt with depression and such. I can say, like, yeah, just be, especially as a guy, your instinct is to be rational, think of solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, here's oh, you're feeling that way. Here's the answer to your problem.
Yeah.
Or, oh, you're not feeling anything. Well, that's good. You know, I mean, it's okay. It's not really about that. And mm-hmm. And what you can do is, often there's nothing you can do apart from just like being there, being supportive, listening, not trying to solve everything,
mm-hmm.
and just making it known that like I'm here and I love yep. you and I'm with you and I support you and like we'll get through this. And you know, but even, and like, try not to say too many like, you know, pleasantries or like shallow little, you know, things that people say. And I don't know, you know, just really listen and try, like Amala was saying, just empathize and get in there in down into the dirt with them as best as you can. But also have a healthy understanding for the fact that you can't know how they feel. You can't
yes.
understand and fully identify with where they're at, and don't pretend like you do, but at the same time, be as present and available and just like supportive as you can.
Yeah. You made a super big point there for all relationships. I don't care if this is friendship or an associate or a relationship or a family member. If anybody comes to you and is just like crying about their problems or wants to rant to you, a first question that will save you from nearly every single argument in your relationship is, do you want answers or do you want a hug? If you do that every single time your girlfriend or your man comes to complain to you or give you a rant about the day that they had, problem solved. Let them answer that question first. Because I think every single argument that couples get into just spans from an issue like that. Okay. Hopefully you answered your question, Elliot. Next one. Dear Will and Amala, advice for being on camera from Hubble Bubble 506. I think both you and I were both uncomfortable being on camera when this first started.
Yeah. I mean, you are just such a natural and so talented at all this that I don't even know if you can give it good advice. Because it's just like, just be good. Just be great at it. It's fine. No.
That's not it. I don't know.
No, I'm sure you have good advice.
I don't know. When I first started at PragerU, I thought I wasn't going to get this job because I was just so uncomfortable being on camera and I think so clearly nervous. And if you go back and watch my old videos, if you go back and watch the first fireside that I ever did with Dennis, you will see those nerves and you'll see how I'm far more shy in that video than I am now. But it's something where you just have to keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it. And eventually you'll just get more comfortable with yourself and who you are. And it's also about identifying what your fear is of being on camera. Like a fear that I used to have was very much attached to insecurity. And if your fear is attached to insecurity of, oh, I'm nervous to be on camera because I don't know how I'm going to be perceived by people and I don't know how I'm going to look and I don't know what I'm going to say. You have to work on that insecurity first and become cemented and secure in who you are. And then when the camera comes out, you're no different than who you are when you're off camera. It's when you try to be something different or exactly. to portray yourself as, this sort of smooth, suave person on camera that it tends to go downhill.
Yeah. It's counterintuitive to say this as being in front of a camera, but don't perform.
Yes.
In essence, like be yourself, because the more you're putting up, you're performing and trying to play up to some level of camera friendliness, the less authentic you are and mm-hmm. the more nervous you'll get because it's much harder to like try to think your way into being the right person and then, spontaneously create this character as it is to just take it, chill and be yourself yeah. and talk. You guys have seen me mess up on camera a lot, so
I'm
by no means a problem. Well, you don't, but it's but yeah, and I think too, just like a little humor, a little like little thing to like just take the air out of the whole, like the tension out mm-hmm. of the whole appearance, and just be like, say something self-deprecating, say something that just puts you in the moment, and that can like really just get rid of all of the pretense, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. It's also important who you're around when you're doing it too. It's funny. Sometimes I'll do interviews and, you'll get this person who's like super dry and super just type A, very somewhat callous. And you go, oh, it's making me nervous that this person is like this. And then I did an interview today with The Conversationalist, which you can look up and follow them on my Instagram. Great team of people. You walk in, it's just such a friendly environment. I always try to give that to people when they come on this show too. And when they meet me and meet us, that it takes away the ease. When you feel like you're around friends, that's a good thing. So pick a good team of people to be around. Next one. Dear Will and Amala, any advice on how to prioritize my goals in a world of distraction? This one's tough. 'Cause you almost want to answer like, just do it. You have goals. That's prioritize your goals.
If Will were here, that's what he would say.
Will would be like, just do it. Prioritizing your goals in a world of distraction. I mean, I am personally one of those people where if I go to bed at the end of the day and I feel like I've accomplished nothing or I've done nothing outside of like a lazy Saturday or something like that, I kind of feel bad. Yeah. And I get that sort of negative reinforcement from myself of, you spent a whole 24 hours on this earth today and you didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just something to be cognizant of and remind yourself of. And it's not always going to be perfect. Some days you're going to wake up and you go, I'm absolutely fine with doing nothing. And I have those days quite often. But you have to have, I think, some form of negative reinforcement built in and attached to your goals. And then positive reinforcement when you do meet those goals. So like a negative reinforcement. If I don't get what I need to get accomplished at work, I'm not going to go home and watch TV. I'm going to go home and like read a book, or I'm going to go home and, go to bed early. And a positive reinforcement would be, if I get this done, I'm going to order food to my apartment tonight. Stuff like that. Just little small things that attach positivity to prioritizing your goals and going for your goals can truly make a difference, because you'll find your lifestyle is better when your goals are reached.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of practical stuff we could add here too about mm-hmm. like, you know, talking about distractions. Okay, put your phone away, or you know, do like a Sabbath style of day where that's the day where you get a lot of things that you want to get done. Read that book or whatever it may be. But I think the deeper question is like, if you, because similar to Amala, like if in general, if my life, if I'm not in a place where I feel connected to what I find meaningful mm-hmm. and to where I don't feel like I have anything to show for what the things I'm doing in my life day to day, I get this existential angst that I can't shake. And you need that. You need something to be bothering you and making you motivated to get out of bed and to do something with your life. Mm-hmm. And so what is that for you? And then really hone in on that and process that and you know, make sure that the things that you're structuring your whole life around what is most valuable. Yep. And ask yourself that question. What is the most important thing in the world that I could be doing, that I should be working on? What does the world need? And how can I help usher that in? And you become accountable to that. You know, like I think Jordan Peterson talks about once you set a goal, you become accountable. So a lot of times we are afraid to set goals because we don't want to be accountable to those goals. Mm-hmm. And so, but that's what you have to do. Have the courage to ask yourself what you should be doing.
Yep. That's exactly right. I think that's perfect. There you go, Jenna. That's what you need to do. Jenna Luena. I hope we answered your question correctly. Here we go. Next one. Dear Will and Amala. Hi, Amala. Huge fan of yours and Will's. I work for a super liberal university in Colorado. Shocker. Gearing up for a woke Black History Month. Advice for how to stand for conservative values in the face of this? And what are your thoughts on the month and the stance society tends to take on it? From @TheMillennialConservative. Big one. Okay. I'll actually have a video coming out about this tomorrow, but let's talk Black History Month for a second. And first question, advice for how to stand for conservative values in the face of this. Just don't change. Keep doing what you're doing. There's nothing that changes in the month of February for me and nothing that changes in the March, May, June, July or any other month. So just continue doing what you're doing. I believe you run an Instagram account for your politics and your political beliefs. So continue to do that and stand for what you believe. There should be nothing that changes in the month of February simply because it's labeled Black History Month. As far as my thoughts on the month itself, why? That's the summation of my thoughts. Why? Why does this exist? And I can understand a time where a Black History Month may have been necessary. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Black History Month sort of got its upbringing in the 1970s. So it was brought up by a couple Black educators at Kent State University who proposed it, and they started celebrating it there. And then actually President Gerald Ford, 6 years later, decided to recognize Black History Month. And from then it became sort of a staple on the American calendar. So maybe in the 1970s it was needed. We're coming right out of the civil rights movement. Maybe we weren't talking as much about Black history and we weren't educating enough about it. But I think that time has since passed and we are educating on Black History Month. In fact, in most states, I won't say in most states, but there are states where it is legislated that we learn about Black history and Blackness's tie to America, which I think is also sort of ridiculous in some ways. But what I think a phrase like Black History Month or a practice of Black History Month does is it actually sort of handcuffs Black people. Why are we consolidating Black history to one month in February? Why not just teach history throughout the year? And if Black people are a part of that history, we talk about that history. The same thing for Hispanic Heritage Month. I feel the same way. There should be no history months for specific races. If anything, that just misconstrues what history is about altogether. It's about time periods and specific events. It's not tied to race. And to do so is really to just limit Black people because you are limiting your history to a month.
Yeah, I'm not going to have much of a better breakdown on Black History Month than Amala, mm-hmm. but I would just say, refuse to say anything that you don't believe to be true. And when you're, no matter what you're confronted with at work with all this woke stuff, you don't just don't, you know, you don't have to make this big, you know, dramatic stand about it, but don't say anything that you don't agree with. Don't be complicit in these narratives that you don't believe in, and be prepared with facts like Amala just laid out to give a defense of your position and a rebuttal if we needed, or just send them the video that Amala is going to post tomorrow.
There you go. That's exactly right. Yeah, don't worry about it. This is not a big deal. It's going to come and go. There's very little controversy around Black History Month that I'm aware of, other than why does it exist? And I think that's a stance that a lot of people share. Next and last question. Dear Will and Amala, oh, this one's juicy. My best friend had a whole conversation about why she's still friends with my ex after he cheated on me. She said that he was mature in the relationship and that's why she's still close with him. They're closer than they've ever been, and she pretty much said that me saying mean things about him is just as bad as him cheating and saying horrible things to me in the relationship. I don't know what to do anymore. My little rainbow. Ooh, girl. Are you sure you want to start the question off with my best friend? Because that's a little questionable to me. I think that's my first question is this girl your best friend if she's extremely close with an ex who cheated on you? Questionable. Questionable. I'm not going to like speculate too much. But Taylor, doesn't that raise a red flag for you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This whole thing just feels like kind of high school-y drama. Look,
It is.
Life gets better after the stuff like this, I promise.
It does. Yeah, this too shall pass.
There are bigger fish to fry, let me just say.
Yes,
than,
there are.
Than this whole type of thing. I understand it feels like a big deal right now, but
But this is her big fish.
Okay.
This is her big fish,
I
Taylor.
I don't
know,
I'm
advice?
Not trying to belittle it. I'm just saying. Like,
sure.
What's my advice? I don't know. You go first.
Okay. First of all, reevaluate the best friend label. Because it sounds like this person is causing you quite a bit of pain in this moment right now. Do best friends try to cause other people pain? Probably not. And it seems to be a concern that you have brought up in your relationship, and she has justified by saying, quote, he is mature in the relationship. I don't know how closely correlated maturity and cheating is, but I would venture to say it is not extremely correlated. So
what does that even mean to be mature in the relationship? Like, does that mean in the context of the relationship he was mature, like in the development of the relationship?
I guess that's what she's trying to say. She said that during your relationship he was mature, which I don't understand.
But he cheated.
That's
not mature.
It's not very mature at all.
And yeah, weak. And
yes.
Yeah, that's not mature.
It sounds like to me, also, Taylor, what's your opinion on men and women being friends? Do you think that this is a platonic relationship if you had to gamble, if you were a gambling man?
Men and women can be best friends,
mm-hmm.
and then they get married. That's what happened to me.
Yeah,
so.
That is true. I would venture to say your homegirl might have some feelings for your ex, man.
Yeah, generally when they have plenty of reason to not stand by and be involved with this person after a relationship, and when they know it's like something that's hurtful to you.
Yes.
Why are they sticking around?
Yeah.
He's just so mature.
Right. All of my best friends, like imagine if your best friend got cheated on by a man and then you went and befriended him and started hanging out with that man. Yeah. Yeah. That's my advice for you, my little rainbow. Reevaluate that. And you've already seemed like you've had the conversation about concerns. Maybe have that conversation one more time if the friendship is extremely important to you. And then go about your business, because it doesn't sound like she's trying to help you feel any better about this situation. Mm. And yeah, that's my two cents. Thank you guys for watching.
Will says just kiss her.
Every time we get a dating question, Will's advice is just kiss her. So yeah, we'll shout that out into the void. Hopefully you don't take that advice. But if you do, let me know, because that'll be an interesting follow-up to this. Guys, that is Dear Will and Amala. You guys submitted your advice questions to my Instagram at @TheAmalaEpinobi and at Taylor Trandall. You can go follow him as well. That is our show for today. We want to let you know we have a new channel called Will and Amala Live. You can go there and subscribe. Eventually, we're going to be exclusively streaming on that channel. So go and give us a follow. Turn on that notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live. That is 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. And we are going to see you tomorrow. Taylor and I, Will, off there in Europe, trouncing around, talking about freedom. But hopefully, we'll have an update from Will. So we will see you tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.